Boat Trader is America's largest boating marketplace with over 100,000 boats to choose from. We offer simple, comprehensive solutions for those looking to sell, find, and finance new or used boats. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fishing Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and today, on this date in October, we're hosting a very special live version. So this is the first time, actually no, it's not the first time, it's the third time that we're using the podcast studio, aka my basement, as an actual podcast studio. So to paint the picture here, I'm sitting across from two of my good buddies, whom I'm going to introduce in just a moment. And we're sitting here in the office with the American flag and the Coast Guard flag and antelope mount and signs and guns and electronics and spice blends and all those things that encompass the world of Harvesting Nature are here. And we're going to do a little recap. As you guys know, if you've been listening to the show long enough, or if you haven't, you're about to learn. I like to do kind of cool trip recaps, and we're going to do one coming up probably next episode for Colin and Ben's elk hunt out in Oregon, because they spent quite a bit of time archery elk. So, but this is going to be focused mainly on Colorado antelope, and it's not an intensive, inclusive, in deep dive into it. We basically spent like a weekend out, had some weather come in, which cut a little short. But we'll go through some highlights, some ups, some downs. I'll tell you, we did come home with meat.
We did, yeah.
Which is an important caveat to this. But before we kick off, I'll hit up on some other news. So right now, as of this recording, we have two spots left at the pig camp. So we had some cancellations due to some scheduling conflicts. So we've got two open spots. That'll be the first or second weekend in December. Let me look real quick. It is the second weekend in December, the 8th through the 11th, down in Texas, just northwest of Dallas. We'll be hosting our second ever wild pig hunting camp, where you can learn to shoot, hunt, butcher, process, and cook wild pigs. It's going to be a great time. So two spots open. Head over to our website. Check that out. You'll see the heading there, Wild Pig Camp. Also, too, we're currently sitting on three wild food blends. We've got the big game blend, we've got the upland fowl blend, and we've got the wild fish blend. We've got those available in the store for sale, ship anywhere, just about. And then we're pending the release of two, so we've got our small game blend, which I think we're the only company to have a small game blend. But that just shows you how important I think small game hunting is. I think everybody at some point in their life has probably hunted some sort of small game. I definitely encourage the eating of it. So we wanted to create its own blend. And then we're also going to have the waterfowl blend, which I'm definitely going to put to use. I think we're going to put it to use for sure this winter. So keep an eye out for the release of those. And then also coming up, we're in the month of October. So towards the end of this month, keep an eye out for the fall issue of Harvesting Nature magazine. So pretty excited about that. Got a good lineup. Got some elk hunting stories. We got some elk recipes. We got some antelope recipes. We got some pinion nuts stories. We've got bird hunting, conservation news. We've got kind of like the whole shebang, just like always. So, you know, keep an eye out for that. It's always good. Awesome, great photo essays. Beautiful cover photography. We've already picked it. I'm not going to spill the beans on what it is. But it's pretty cool. And then, really, I think the next big event for me is I'm heading up to Wyoming here next weekend to go hunt mule deer and antelope up there. It's one of my favorite places to go hunting. So really excited for that. So I'm sure prepare yourself for a recap episode of that, too, coming down the way. But definitely be some more food conversation episodes in between those. But I will now introduce to you the two people sitting across from me. Well, I'm going to tell you their names, and then they're going to introduce themselves. So I hope you guys have something prepared. Just think about whatever you want to say. So Eric, go ahead, go first.
Yeah, so my name's Eric Jones. I grew up in Florida. Mm-hmm. I grew up hunting whitetail deer, small game, fishing in a creek for bluegill and war mouth bass, if that's even a thing anymore.
Wait a minute, what was that?
War mouth bass. So it's what they call smallmouths.
Oh,
down
got
in the
it.
Southeast.
Okay.
But from there, grew up into being a hunter and fisherman as an adult. Spent some time working for the state as a park ranger, doing some conservation work there, and then ultimately chased my dream of moving out west and getting into some of this action out here.
Nice. And you've been out here 2 years now?
2 years, roughly, yeah.
Okay, cool. Tom?
Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Russo from God's Country, otherwise known as Texas.
Yeah.
they are the bigger brother of Oklahoma.
Thank you for the reminder.
grew up in the southeast part of Texas, hunting rabbit, squirrel, you name it, and then advanced to deer, hog, and have loved ever since as a family tradition. Basically been all over the country and finally got moved out here to Colorado, Aurora area, and yep, went on my first ever antelope hunt with you and Eric.
Yep, which is an important moment here. And we're also missing, she'll likely join us at some point, but Zoe, my daughter, went with us too, and the plan is for her to make her first podcast debut tonight, but she's currently eating because she's got back from rugby training. So we'll go ahead and continue with her, and she can hop in wherever, and I'm sure she's going to have some comments of her own naturally. But so let's start sort of how we got there, and we'll paint the picture. So we hunted an area down in southeast Colorado-ish, down southeast of Pueblo. So if you picture the I-25 corridor, as they call it here, it's to the eastern side of that. But it was not our first choice. I'll let Eric, if you want to go into, because this came per your experience last year sort of with it.
Yeah, so I hunted that unit last year, had a successful hunt there last year. It was my first ever antelope hunt.
Last year. Nice.
And so whenever I tried to draw this year, point creep's a real thing, and I didn't draw my pick. So didn't draw the second. No, the second draw we did draw. We were all over here at your house for a barbecue and having a good time talking about doing an antelope hunt. We all put in for units, and this was our fourth choice on the second draw, and that's what we drew. I knew the area. I knew there was a little bit of public land down there, so that was why I was hoping that we drew there, because most of the units left in the secondary had little to no public. Mm-hmm. So that was why I recommended. At least I knew that we could hunt it.
Yeah, and going down there, I looked at the on the way back up the leftover tags. There were still three leftover tags for this unit.
Yeah.
And so that's after the first drawing, the second drawing, and then the initial run, which at this point were 2 months after they released the leftover tags.
So there was 133 leftovers for here after the second draw.
Oh, yeah.
I looked at it.
So that means 100 and 30 people bought before I looked at it.
Correct.
Which is insane. I think we saw them all.
Yeah. Every one of them. All on the roads.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like antelope is one of those things that it's very common to see people sort of road hunting them. And because they're like usually very visible. But like I told you guys, a lot of the success I've had with antelope hunting is like finding those like little pockets of land that people overlook from the road, and then like all you gotta do is like get over the hill and like, you know, see this spot, and there's like, oh look, wow, there's a herd of antelope bedded down there. So we definitely had some tactics going into it, and I think our tactics were good. It was kind of like, it's always that bet whenever you hunt and travel of like you're kind of like hunting slash scouting, and it usually like takes you a couple days to work into it. And I usually say it takes you like 4 days. It's like one day, the first day is completely wasted. Like if you harvest an animal on the first day, it's usually out of just like pure luck. And then like the second day, you're like, okay, we're gonna dial in a little bit more. And then like the third day, usually you see an animal. And then like the fourth day is like, all right, I know where I need to be. I know where they're moving. I know how to be in position, and like usually get set up pretty well to like take the animal. So that's like when I hunt and travel, I always try to do like 3 to 4 days. But we did this one basically in two, or one and a half.
One and a half,
because we got rained out on the last day. But it was still good. I mean, that's all that time would allow for us. It was local here, so we just went down and just knocked out real quick. So this is not a big epic saga. But it is a saga, and it is epic. It's just not an epic saga.
There was definitely a fair share of drama.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're going to get into that. But, Tom, what was, like, coming into it, what was your perception of, like, what you thought antelope hunting would be? And feel free to recap, like, conversations that you and I had or, like, anything.
So, on the way down there, we were talking about how this was going to really defer from my hunting experience in Texas and Arkansas, mm-hmm. which I'm used to sitting in a stand. Mm-hmm. And you explained to me that it's going to be a lot of stock. It's going to be a lot of walking, mm-hmm. long miles, mm-hmm. as I must say. Mm-hmm. I think I lost like 10 pounds. But and then you told me that you and Eric were going to show me the ropes basically on how to go about getting up close and trying to get up on an antelope basically to see if I could shoot it or not. We went over a bunch of the regs. We went over about how, what they look like, the black patches on the lower part of the back jaw, mm-hmm. How to tell the difference between a male and a female, the antler length on what was legal, what was not legal for a female tag. Mm-hmm. And then you explained to me, like, hey, this is, first day is basically comprised of trying to figure out where they're at, where they're located, what position we can get into, how we're going to meet up with Eric. Eric was already out there, by the way, mm-hmm. Setting up everything, scouting it out, scoping everything out, getting us, trying to get us success down there.
Yeah, so we could not make it down the Friday before, so the season opened on a Saturday morning. We couldn't, so Tom and I decided to get up at 3:30 in the morning and drive the 3 hours down to there while dragging Zoe along too. Not against her will, because she wanted to come, but she was actually super excited to come, and I wish she would come down here. But so can you tell us a little bit about your experience with this unit last year?
Yeah, so last year, again, this unit doesn't have a ton of public. It does have some, that, but it's just not good antelope country from what I see. And last year, opening, I did the same thing you guys did, which was I drove down the morning of the opener, daybreak, got into a spot that I had pre-scouted earlier in the summer. And I sat that first spot that we sat on all day last year. And then I had a doe tag, and right around sunset, a yearling buck walked out on the day of the opener, and I put a stalk on him, got all the way within maybe 100 yards, and decided to pass because I couldn't tell if he was legal or not, because the, like I said, the regs are under 5 inches for the horns. I went back, did some actual antelope biology studying about the length of the ears and all of that, and convinced myself that he was a legal animal for that tag. Also, the weird thing about him, he didn't have a black patch.
Oh, not yet. Yeah, so he probably was true yearling.
True yearling, right.
So did he still have the like mohawk on the back?
Yep.
Yeah.
But like a true yearling. So I said to my, I went and sat the next spot the next morning, and I said, if he comes out, I'm going to let my hunting partner, who was there with me, also on his first antelope hunt, put a stalk on him, which he did, successful, and got down there, and he decided he wasn't comfortable shooting. He came back up, and I said, well, dude, I'm going to go after this antelope. So I went down there, got within 100 yards of him again, in the area, no cover other than that small amount of sage that you saw. So I was just low crawling for like 700 yards. Got up to him, and you know, successful shot.
Yeah.
I went down right away. So I was pretty excited. I mean, I was happy with the, you know, the outcome of my hunt last year. But yeah, it was a successful hunt, but it wasn't, you know, your dream antelope hunt for your start, was it? You know, that was kind of how it went last year.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why Midway USA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
So now we're joined by Miss Zoe Catherine. Zoe, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Zoe Catherine.
You want to tell us about yourself, about your hunting experience? And fishing?
I mostly do fishing because I haven't got into hunting, like fully hunting. But I love fishing more than hunting because it's easier and actually not that long.
What do you mean not that long?
Like, you find a fish, you cast a rod, before you cast the rod, you put on the bait. All that stuff.
Oh, so you're saying the length of time it takes to be productive is shorter?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. And what's your favorite part about hunting and fishing?
Getting all the meat.
Yeah? Why is that?
Because you get to try different kinds of meat and different kinds of fish. It's actually really good.
Well, what's special about the wild meat?
You know where it came from.
Well, yeah, but for you. What's special about wild meat for you? That's the only meat you get to eat.
Yeah, that's the only one I get to eat.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've got it. So you can join us in on this conversation. You can say whatever you want at any time. Don't wait till you're asked. You can just say a comment. It's just like us talking, but without headsets, okay? So what did you think about when I asked you to come down with us?
I was happy because I want to see what it's like.
What's what like?
Like what it is to be antelope hunting, because I've never been antelope hunting before.
Got it. So you're excited to go?
Yes.
Nice. And then what do you think whenever we got down there? What about how the environment looked like? Can you describe it?
It had cracked ground with a lot of gorges. What a gorgeous gorge there was when we saw it.
Yes.
What was the name of that one?
George the Curious Gorge.
Yep.
Nice. Yeah, so that's a perfect segue. So we'll talk a little bit about the environment we were in. So my experience hunting antelope has mainly been in central Wyoming, which is more rolling plains, kind of like grazing area, you would think, versus this location is more, it's southwest Colorado. It's like southwest Colorado, northern New Mexico. Like, there are patches of like grass grazing area, but I would feel like a lot of it, I mean, there was challa cactuses, there's like Nopalis cactus, there's cedar, there's pinyon pine, there are a lot of geographic features as far as like bluffs and hogbacks and gorges. Buttes and gorges and dry river bottoms and things like that. So it wasn't what I would say, like, typically I would hunt antelope at, which would be like a big open area with grass and a lot of, you know, sage and food and stuff that they enjoy. So I think that was reflective of the amount of animals that we saw, but also too, there's not a lot of water there.
Right.
And I think that was also reflective of where we started to see the animals at, was within proximity of like some of the water troughs.
Well, and I will say that this year is a lot drier down there than last year. So that was a big difference, because my scouting had all come from last year's trip.
Yep.
So I thought, hey, I'm going to go back to the same spots I was at last year. But this year it was so much, there was just nothing for them to eat. There was no water. There was no
it green. Was not green. I think sage was green, maybe. Some spots, we found one hill that was kind of green, which I think too was evident, because I was telling you about the pinion nuts from the pinion pine, and how Erica Davis, she's known as the Wild Food Girl, she's been on the podcast before, talking about foraging in the Rocky Mountains and Colorado and stuff like that. She said that this year would not be a good year for pinion because it was so dry. And so the weekend before this, or 2 weekends before, I forget which, my season's running together now, I was over on the west side of the I-25 corridor, probably about 4 hours to the west, no, not 4 hours, 2 hours to the west from where we were. And there I was finding pinion nuts with full fruit inside the nut. And here we cracked several pinion nuts and they're like shriveled up seeds inside, like not great, not your typical pinion nut or pine nut you would think of. It was like very not great, right, Zoe?
Yeah, it kind of felt like a dried out mushroom, but it, or not mushroom, marshmallows, just without like the crack in it.
Okay.
All right.
I'll take that. Let's see. Anything else for the environment you guys think?
No, nothing. I mean, nothing, like I said, it was just really dry this year. That was the big thing. I was surprised at how dry it was.
And then the locations we were hunting at, like Eric mentioned earlier, like little amounts of private land, or sorry, large amounts of private land, little amounts of public land. So you can imagine if you've got maybe 5 huntable pieces of land and over probably 200, 300 hunters, I would say they weren't all there in that proximity, but probably throughout the week, in and out, that you would see them come in and out. We definitely saw a lot of hunters, a lot of pressure. So we'll go ahead and start with the first day. So we call, Eric's already down there. He's set up waiting for us. He's going to meet us at the spot at basically sunrise. Tom and I are in the truck, and Eric calls me, and you give me the lay down of like what's going on.
Yeah, there was an idiot out on the out on the public that we were planning to hunt. It's
the
a
best part.
It's an it
what
the best part about it.
So this is a state trust land, which is not only accessible by foot. Is I think that's pretty much a blanket rule for all state trust land across the state. I don't know any of it that you can actually drive on. It's only open sunrise to sunset. You can't camp on it. So I get there, and there is this guy driving right out into the middle of the only 1 mile by 1 mile sized land that we can hunt.
Which was the same spot you shot your antelope last year, so you're like familiar with it.
I'm familiar with it. The scouting I had done the year before, I went down there, and there was a herd of, you know, 20 antelope. It was, I mean, I felt good about this spot. Yeah. And so, but at this point, I've kind of committed because there's so many hunters in such a little area that now I either have to deal with this Yahoo out here in the driving in the middle of it, or I've got to try and hope that one of the other spots isn't taken.
Yeah.
And it's already getting, you know, we're after sunrise at this point. So I ultimately waited on you guys, but I thought our best decision was to be just to go ahead and hopefully he'll be out of there soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that was, I don't know if you want to
kick
it back over there.
So we got there, and I never heard, I had heard the expression, but I'd never experienced it in life. But the like sea of orange that people always talk about for a second and third elk rifle here in Colorado, because it's like the over the counter tags, is like, that was this scenario played out. We got in, and like we parked next to Eric, but along this stretch of road for like the 1 mile, there were three other vehicles, and then the one in the middle. And I was just like, holy smokes. And then there's like four guys that get out of one vehicle, and then us four, and like we're basically like racing them to get all of our stuff together. And we had kind of like thrown everything in the truck this morning, so we were trying to get it all together and get Zoe together and just get out to the spot. So those guys like started walking in. We started walking in. We saw what we thought was another guy at another spot, which ended up being a bucket. But we later found out there's like another guy walking the ridge.
Well, there was a guy over by that bucket. He just didn't have any orange
on. Oh, that's right. The guy with the no orange on, which, wow.
You got very lucky to get away.
Yeah, we'll come back. Don't give that away yet. We'll come back to that. So we go out and like set in this spot, basically. And at this point, it's just like we walk past the truck that's parked there, and we're like, oh, yep, all right, so there's somebody parked here. And so we go up and we sit, and we're like, well, hopefully this works out. So we sit on the ridge for a bit and really like see all the people driving around, like, because we're probably half a mile from the road, and just people cruising up and down the road, stopping, looking, seeing us, keep going, watch the other hunters move around, and this goes on for a while. And then, so we are probably 400 yards from where this truck is parked at, but we're like up on the side of the hill. Well, the person who leased the land from the state to like run cattle on or do whatever comes, like, we only assume that it's him because this other vehicle comes out, drives out there, and parks behind the person's truck. And we're like, all right, well, this is obviously going to be very interesting. And so he then comes over to us.
Yeah. Well, he came over. We were the closest ones to the truck. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's a natural assumption.
Naturally be like, those are the lazy people there, because right, they parked exactly where they were going to go
exactly. So he comes up. So I decide that I'm going to go down and meet him down off the hill so he doesn't have to come up and talk to us. And I'm like, hey, man, you know, it's not us. It's not our vehicle. And he was, for lack of better, he was pissed that they were out there.
We could hear him up on the hill.
Yeah, he gave you, even after you told him, like, that's not my truck, he, like, gave you an earful about, like, why it's not okay to park your truck out there.
Right.
I was like, but it's not us. He's like, I don't care. It's like,
yeah. I mean, and at the same time, you know, it's, I understand why the dude's upset.
Yeah.
And I just tried to diffuse it the best that I could and kind of talk him off the ledge, but, And then he, but ultimately he was fine with me once he figured out it wasn't my truck. And, you know.
And then he went on and some other people came out and talked to him. And I don't know, at some point the game warden was called.
Yep.
Because the next person to come out was the game warden. And this was like an hour of us like after that probably. And we're all sitting there like, at this point the sun's up, it's hot, shining on us. We're on the like east side of this hill and you know, we're just hanging out. So...
Yeah, the morning's hunt's blown.
Yeah.
I mean, it's over for the morning, at least at that point.
So then the warden drives out.
Yep.
And he pulls up behind the person, and then you go down there and talk to the warden.
Yep, I went down and talked to the game warden. Really nice fella. And was just trying to tell him, you know, hey, I don't, you know, I basically gave him all the information I could to help, but there wasn't a whole lot I could give him because I was there whenever the guy was pulling out, but I didn't see what direction he headed or anything like that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, talked to the warden, and he came up and decided to check all of our licenses.
Yes.
Which is, you know, it's what he's there for. So,
yeah.
Checked all of our licenses, and it was all good. Tom, you got to realize you got hustled. Which was kind of fun.
Oh yeah, let's recap this.
So the day before we went down, I told Justin, I was like, "Hey, I'm gonna make some last minute gear purchases and everything." And then when I get to the sportsman place, I realized that hey, I don't have antelope tags. And so I was like, "Hey, I talked to you about it."
Well, it's
was,
not that you don't have them. They didn't
get mailed to me.
Yeah.
And so I was looking at it, discussing things with you, and I was like, hey, I'm just going to go inside and talk to the person to see what can happen. Get to the register, and I was like, hey, this is what happened. I never got a mail to me. And they're like, oh, yeah, we can help you out. And initially the one gentleman at the register was like, should only be like $5.
Yeah, $5 reprint.
Yeah, right. And so I was like, hey, that's cool. I can afford that. And the other person was like, oh, checking it through and da da da. And she goes, oh, that's $50. And I was like, well, I'm not going to not go on this hunt. So here you go. Here's my card. I'll pay for it.
Oof.
And I get back out to the truck and I text you and Eric.
Yeah.
Hey, this is what's happening. And yep. I think I called you too. And you're likely. Like, that doesn't seem right. And I was like, you know what? It doesn't seem right because I already had the elk tag.
Yep.
And so I went back in the store and they're like, yeah, we probably charged you wrong. I was like, I think you did. Can you reimburse me? They're like, no. So anyways, talk to the game warden.
No. Which they probably could.
Well, I didn't want to waste any time. I was already tired. Talk to the game warden. He just kind of laughed at me because he was like, yeah, you weren't supposed to do that. They should have discharged you for the antelope tags to duplicate them. He goes, I was like, so do I just go down to one of your local offices and try and get reimbursed? Ultimately, probably not going to happen. So
no. Well, at least you know your dollars should go into conservation.
Correct.
Or to Sportsman's Warehouse. Or
Sportsman's Warehouse. Which I was just Googling to see. I think it was supposed to be a $5 charge. So,
but I think they do. It's $5 per.
Correct, but...
It's $5 per... it's not like $5 to get your entire license reprint, because I had to go get my fishing license. And he's like, oh, do you want to add your fur bear on here? And I was like, yeah, sure. And he's like, actually, it's another $5 to put the fur bear. So when they printed it, they hit you for your hunting license. They hit you for your fishing license. They hit you for your small game. They hit you for your elk tag. And they hit you for your antelope tag.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus whatever processing fees they had, plus tax or whatever. That's why it was $50. But yeah, in reality, they should have been able to just print your antelope one, and that would have been only $5.
Yeah, just the pronghorn.
But like you said, conservation has got an extra $45.
Somebody does.
What? It's all good.
Yeah. Let's see. Where were we at? Oh, yeah, so we got our license checked. We got all our shit. We hung out. We chatted with the warden for a bit. And then he basically left, and was like, I'm going to go wait for this person to come back.
Yeah.
And so we sat there, and while we were sitting there, somebody came out and like walked past the truck, which we thought this was, we were like, oh, this is going to be great. The drama is going to be on. And then that person kept going. That person also
Let me hop in. So this is the guy and not in orange. So this is what happens. So the guy comes out to the truck. The warden comes out, thinks it's him, but the guy keeps walking past the truck. As the warden comes out and comes to the truck, the guy that wasn't wearing orange along the line of the property walks out. And so the warden comes back up, talks to me again, and I was like, yeah. I'm like, did you see the guy over there just walked out not wearing any orange? And he was like, no, I missed him. Where's he at? And I'm like, he's driving off. So
the guy came out, first day of rifle, which Colorado is pretty strict about their orange. It's like orange vest has to be visible from 360 and a hat.
Yeah.
And
they're strict about their hats.
They're strict about their hats.
I like the color.
Thank you, Zoe. It faded, okay? But anyway, I wore it.
Well, we got to tell the story now.
All right. So the warden is sitting there talking to us in the initial, and he just like, he's staring at me oddly. And I'm like, okay.
He's staring at the celebrity.
No.
All right. We're gonna go down this rabbit
hole.
Okay,
let's do it.
So when I went down to meet the warden initially, as we're walking back up, I'm like, just so you know, I'm like, the guy over the left, it's a celebrity. And he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, do Harvesting Nature. You haven't heard of it? And he's like, no. And I'm like, oh, you got to check it out. So immediately we get up there, and you know, the warden's kind of giving Justin a hard time about, you know, being a celebrity, and Justin's hating every minute of it because I'll take the heat for this one. I'm a jerk, but it was just too much fun to pass up in the moment. But yeah, so
he's looking at me oddly, and he gets quiet, and then he's looking at me, and I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on here. And he's like, your hat's not orange enough. It's not fluorescent anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, it's not? And he's like, no, it's not. Do you have something else to put on your head? And I was like, yes, I do. And so I ended up wearing like one of our orange beanies for the rest of the weekend, despite the heat.
Yeah.
It's okay. It is what it is. Like, right? Like, I would rather be safe, and I'm out there with my kiddo. I would rather be safe than not. So whatever. I'm happy to comply by rules. If it's faded, it's faded. So
absolutely. No, I mean, I wouldn't have said, I didn't tell you at the beginning of the hunt that I didn't think your hat wasn't fluorescent enough. But at the same time,
it's all your guys' fault.
Right. Yeah.
It's your fault too, Zoe.
That's who I blame it on, Zoe.
Zoe's fault.
No, I mean, you want to split hairs about it? That's fine too, man. You know,
it's all good. It didn't matter to me, but let's circle back around. So the guy came out with no camo, or no orange, in full camo. We couldn't tell if he was carrying a bow or a rifle.
Yeah, I wasn't that concerned about it other than the fact that I was just curious, you know. And then, so then the game warden tries to run off and find out who that is or whatever.
Yeah.
But now the truck is still sitting there, and what, it's 11 o'clock?
In which, too, at some point we'd heard some shots, and there was some debate on where the shots had come from, because so the piece of land we were hunting, there was also like a sliver of BLM attached to it. My speculation, although we never found remains.
I think I'm going to hold fast that I was right.
That it came from another piece of land like a mile away?
Correct.
I don't that.
Well, we did.
We did find remains there.
Correct.
But
so
I don't know.
The area that I said the shot came from, we found a dead antelope on.
Yeah.
And the area that you said you heard the shot from, there was no dead antelope on.
Okay.
Maybe it was far away?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
a really loud boom.
I mean, wait, no, that doesn't support my thoughts.
It's both of yours.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. I mean, I thought one guy was packing out, because the way he had his rifle slung, but maybe he was just done and just had threw it on his pack. But
yeah, who knows?
Didn't y'all make a bet on that?
No.
Well.
Oh, man. That would be fun.
Why? Then it would have lost. Not fun at all. So, essentially, we like hung out there, like knowing that it is. But at this point, and I told you earlier, I was like, I bet all the hunters are going to be out by like 10.
Yeah.
And at 10 o'clock, yeah, like we found ourselves, with the exception of the truck still parked in the middle. All the other trucks on the road were out. We weren't really sure where the other truck or the other person from the truck parked in the middle of the field was, but I wanted to go check out that piece of BLM land. So we like Tom and Zoe and I gathered our stuff and we went back and Eric stayed there and went back and it was like kind of went on a bit of a hike through some river ravines and buttes and all that to like kind of get back to where I wanted to get. But we got back there, great antelope country, and then we find a hunter there. And then as we're there, Eric texts me that the other guy came out and that the warden did confront him.
Yeah.
And I'll let you tell that because you saw it.
Oh, man. You know, it's like you want to feel sorry for the guy and then you remember he's the idiot. But the guy comes out and sure enough, the warden comes up, catches him red-handed. They're sitting there. They have a conversation. I'm trying not to like glass the whole thing because
The mild hunting drama.
Right. Well, right.
Telenovela.
Like, yeah, exactly. But you know, like I don't want to like be in their business, but I feel like I've earned it because he's ruined my morning hunt at this point. But I'm watching and they start talking. The warden goes back, ends up taking the hunter's rifle. So I'm assuming he did something worse than park on state trust land. Because the warden took his rifle and went back there and wrote, I don't know. I mean, it looked like the game warden was writing a novel on his tailgate before letting the guy go.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But it was... watching it play out in front of me, while I want to feel bad for the guy, I also am kind of happy that he got caught. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I feel like it all depends on too. Like, I know me personally. Like, I'm super paranoid about not knowing the regulation for the area, and then like tripping up and making a mistake. And like, even if I get caught, like, I feel bad in that moment. You know, then I realize, like, oh man, I made a mistake, and I'm like, I'm not properly using the land, or I'm not respecting the boundaries, or I'm, you know, the landowner could be unhappy. Like, I don't want to ruin the reputation for hunters, like, all these things like that. But, like, there's a difference between an honest mistake and just, like, not looking into it.
Yes.
And it's posted there.
Yes. And on a big sign.
Yeah.
And not only that, I mean, everyone else is parked on the road. How many trucks were there?
Yeah, like four.
Yeah. Even common sense should tell you, hey, I shouldn't drive out here onto this very fragile landscape as the landowner.
Quote, unquote, as he drives out. It's fragile. When you leave your tracks on it, it never grows back. It erodes. I'm like, you drove your truck out here like 3/4 of a mile to get to us to tell us this.
Yeah, man.
But, it is what it is. No, so then Eric had told me like that was going down up there and we were back in the back. So now at this point, not expecting anyone to be back there, and like there's still a guy like roaming around back there at the bottom of like this BLM land. So we were like, ah, well, this spot looks really good, but we're gonna go ahead and head back. And then Eric tells me that the person parked their car and came back in without a rifle, so yep, likely joining that other person. And so then from there we had lunch, delicious lunch, basically in the full sun.
Plenty of people dusting us, driving by, man. At 30 miles an hour.
Man, I smelled dust like the entire weekend. Like, you know, it's just like it's in your everywhere. And yeah, and then we decided we're going to go check out another spot, which that spot is the one we got up to, and that somebody had shot an antelope there. We found, like, they used the gutless method on it, and so they had taken the quarters and the loins and stuff like that off of it, and yeah, we scouted around a bunch. All that piece of property was way better antelope country than some of the other spots. And then we decided we're going to go to another chunk of the other one's the SWA, right?
SWA, yep.
State Wildlife Area. And that's where we decided we were going to try to get back into this one back parcel and then like camp there as well. Just like camp, like Eric in the back of his truck and Tom had a tent, Zoe and I had a tent. And so we were going to camp there and stay the night and try to, like, hunt that. But, like, quickly realizing once we got there that it was not great territory for antelope. Like, the spots that were flat and open where you would find antelope were either surrounded by a lot of steep ground in, like, kind of a small pocket. So picture, like, either a butte, so where the sides are steep and the top is flat, or, like, I don't know what you would call this, and I'm probably going to make myself sound silly, but a reverse butte to where let's call it a valley.
Yeah, a valley will work.
Yeah,
a gorge would a probably gorge, would also
a wide open spot that has steep rises all around it, so likely not going to find antelope in those because they typically like to be able to run away really quickly, and they typically don't like going through the gorges and stuff. Like, through my experience, I'm sure somebody else has had other experiences. Maybe the antelope are different in different places, but no, we hunted around there, got to see a double rainbow.
Yeah,
that was really pretty.
Yeah.
Say that again?
That was really pretty.
The double rainbow?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. We took some photos, some photo op times.
We also, in that SWA, saw the other 130 hunters.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. To include the folks that double parked in the campground and took
whoever you are, if you're listening,
please
there's four parking spaces to camp in. Don't put your trailer in one of them and park your truck in the other.
Not a good idea.
It's a public service announcement.
Yeah, so we ended up camping near there, but not in the camping area, which is like the camping area is nice and level and has good bottom, and everywhere else is just like craggly with cactus and rocks, as Tom found out.
I was too dang tired after I set that tent up to resituate, so I slept on a rock.
Yeah, so all in all, I think the first day we did probably 7 miles, I think is what we tallied.
Yeah, I think you guys went over 7. Yeah. I think you got, because I did 6. I think you guys did 8 with your extra hike because I stayed to watch the hunting soap opera.
Yep.
It feels like it was 2 miles, but more pain, like up a hill, a gigantic mountain.
2 miles up a gigantic mountain.
Yes.
Yeah. And the only antelope, I think we only saw, one antelope. A young yearling buck, and then I saw a herd kind of tucked in somewhere, but all of them on private land, none of them public land. Probably due to all the 130 hunters we saw.
Correct.
And then the one person shot one. So then we devised our strategy for the next day, which was going to be to go back to the previous spots and kind of like hop around, basically spend as much time moving and covering land as we could. And there was one spot of BLM that we hadn't really checked out the day before.
Before we move on,
okay,
there's something I want to talk about here with fellow hunters, because I had to explain this, and this has nothing to do with hunting, okay, but it has to do with the night before, the second day.
Okay.
So I've come up with a conclusion, and I'd love to hear some feedback on this.
Okay.
But I think there is a rule somewhere that says that if you are actively hunting, you cannot drink good beer. It has to be like, so coming from the south, I actually was trying to explain this.
No, that's me. Sorry.
I was trying to explain this to someone of why we were drinking cheaper beer. And they were like,
first off, Coors Banquet beer is a luxury beer.
All right. Listen, I hear you out here in Colorado. It's the land of, you know, plentiful when it comes to your beer choices. But I was trying to explain to this person that you have to.
Yeah.
So, like, growing up in the Southeast, it was always Bush Light.
Yep.
And, you know, up in the Midwest, it's either Hams.
Yep.
And
Hams, PBR, Montucky, or Coors Banquet.
My point is, I am too when I'm hunting. I also Bush Light because I'm from the Southeast.
Not a Bush Latte fan.
Nobody is.
Is it Hams or Ham?
Hams. Yeah, it's from Minnesota.
That sounds really weird.
That's the thing is that you would, when would you ever order, if you and I went out for our strategic planning meeting at a local brewery, you didn't order a Hams there.
They didn't have it.
Get out. But this is my point, though. Like, I'm never ordering a Busch Light when I go out to the bar.
Well, I mean, I think the thing of it is, too, is, like, I don't want to drink a, you know, a heavy beer. Like, I like good beer. I do. And I think all those are great beers. I think there are other not great beers that I wouldn't drink also. But I think it's a requirement.
I do too. No, I'm forming this hypothesis. I think all those would be great beers and sponsors for this show.
Yes, please. Montucky, I've already talked to you. Come on. Come through. No. So one thing I think about though is you think about the availability of beers at like proximity to places you would hunt/camp. And I don't like we're going backcountry or we're doing things like that. Like, I'm not taking beer, but like, if we're just like car camping or doing whatever, like, I want to have a beer at night and just like hang out and then, you know, go hunting the next day.
So. No, I 100% agree. I had to explain myself to my friend as to why I would be going that route for my beer decision making. And I was like, I think it's a requirement.
Well, I think too, you don't want like a high alcohol content like brew.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you. I agree with what you're saying. I'd love to hear others' experience. If there's somebody out there that just is like, no, I take my double porter, I'd love to laugh at them.
That may be the title of the show here. I take my double porter antelope hunting. So let's see. So, all right, we've moved on. So now we're at day two. Day two is a special day. So we go to this. We take the long route around from the state land over to the land we'd hunted previously the day before. We saw the great hunting drama of October 2022. And on in route, there's a sliver of BLM, and it's probably 400 yards wide.
Yeah.
Yep. And about a mile deep.
Yep.
And it's got a portion of the road on it. And so we're like, oh, we're going to pass by. And so as we pass by, adjacent to that, there are two antelope bucks. One very mature one and one who is a yearling who possibly has antlers that are under that 5-inch rule. And so we decide then and there that we're going to go set up. Actually, you guys decide, and I decided to make coffee, which for those that know the coffee stories with me, that's when we see game. Do you guys go set up for that? And so I'll let you both collectively share. So first off, Tom's up to shoot first because it's his first antelope hunt. So you guys just tag team this. Emotions, feelings, excitement, whatever. Play by play.
Yeah, so we all decided that Eric and I would go out there. Eric gives me a little prep talk about how we're going to get up there, and just number one rule, do not look at them.
Do not look Medusa in the eyes. You'll turn to concrete.
And I'm not going to lie, I was kind of looking at Eric crazy because I was like, if we're just ignoring them, they're going to be cool with it because like I told y'all before, I've only whitetailed hunt. And so, yeah, it turned out true. Eric's like, you looking at him? I was like, no, I'm not looking at him. And
through your fingers.
Like, every time Eric would look back, or I would look back, when Eric looked back, they were just chilling.
Yeah, that antelope did not care. Because I was making coffee. But I was also trying to, like, make a lot of noise and, like, distract him so he wasn't watching you guys and he was watching me instead, which didn't work. He didn't care about anything.
Yeah.
And
so it is a theory. And yeah. We talked about this, but I have subscribed to it, and it has treated me well with not only antelope but mule deer, which is if you are actively not giving them attention, if you're not acting like you're a predator, I've had much better luck on stalks. So we didn't have, there was no way we were getting to any of the greenery from where we were at, either without low crawling 800 yards up a hill or just giving it a shot for Tom to get up close to it. So we used that method, and two of us, Tom and I, literally walked 400 yards across and another 500 yards back, just slowly, methodically, kind of another way I describe it is just kind of kicking the dirt in front of you, just acting like you don't care about the animal at all. And the animal was actively, like, if you picture a triangle, the antelope was meeting us at, like, he was walking towards where we were walking towards. Yes. We ended up with him. I asked Tom what comfort level you were comfortable shooting, and you said, you know, somewhere between 200 and 300 was, you know, plenty for you. And I said, okay, well, we're going to go for that tree over there to try and get some cover. We made it there, and at first when we first saw the yearling antelope, I told you, I think that's illegal. I think that's illegal antelope. And we got out there, and I ranged him at 300. I told Tom, I said, I think he's a legal antelope. But he was coming towards us still, and Tom and I were in a great ambush spot. We were right there, didn't even need to stalk him anymore. We had tree for cover. And he got within 200. He was at 199. And I looked at Tom and I said, I think I don't know anymore. I told you guys. Ultimately, I think his horns were somewhere between 4 and 6 inches, and that's just too much for my comfort level.
Yeah.
I think it could have completely been a legal antelope. Could have also not been a legal antelope.
I don't know. I wouldn't have shot it. I told you guys that from the beginning. I was like, I would not feel comfortable shooting this antelope. And then I looked it up later after we talked about it, and it was like an antelope's ears are on average 5.5 inches tall. But right. That depends on food, water, age, all these things. Like, there's so many factors, but it's like, it was so very close to call.
Yeah. And ultimately, you don't, if it's too, you know, it's not one of those things you want to find out that you're wrong after the fact. I told you the one that I killed the year before was a yearling buck, and I was comfortable with him. And the one thing that I was curious about with this one, the two things were he had a full black patch.
Yeah.
Which meant he probably was a full year old.
Yeah.
Which scared me a little bit. And I also had a tag. So if I felt comfortable, I could have pulled the trigger, even if Tom wasn't. But I told Tom I couldn't comfortably do it, and I let you make your own decision.
So. Well, I looked through the scope, you looked through the binos. We did that like 5 times because we were sitting there discussing it the whole time while he was moving towards us. And he got what, he was in between 100 and 200.
Yeah, he got to 199.
Yep, and then we finally made the call that we weren't going to do it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then he just kind of like meandered away, like not spooked. You guys walked back and he just like walked away. And we were like, okay. And then we saw across the hill behind us, as I was making coffee, there were two doe antelope that decided just to pop out of nowhere. And then we were like, okay, cool. Same scenario. There's obviously something they're moving towards that way. So we all then collectively went and got at the top of the hill. And unfortunately, those doe antelope like spooked. So we went up and sat at the top of the hill, just kind of like glassed around waiting for some of the antelope to potentially come our way. And who but saunters in the same young antelope buck. And this time he's just like walking towards us. And so I take my game bag out and I put it on a tree because I know that, in fact, in the past, I've used a game bag as a flag, as a way that antelope will stop and will come towards it because they're curious, versus like a human silhouette where they won't be. So I put it there, and he like started slowly closing the distance. And he closed the distance from, I think I ranged originally at 230, and he got down to probably 75 yards away.
Yep.
And then at that point, he dropped in like a little gully, and we also all at this point put like we put glass on him, and all agreed unanimously like not a legal buck.
Right.
Like his antlers were exactly at the tip of his ears, so 5.5 inches or more.
Right.
Yeah. So not none of us at that point were comfortable. We could have like I could have thrown a rock at him.
Correct.
But I did shoot him with my camera.
Yeah.
And I got probably like one of the coolest pictures I will see. I actually need to put it, I'll put it on the computer here in a bit after this. But he's on a ridge and he's kind of like quartering away from me. But in the background are the range called here in Colorado, the Wet Mountains. And so you can just see that in the background. Super, super cool picture. I'll put it up on social media too as we kind of tell the story. It may, by the time you listen to this, it may already be up because I'm excited to share some of our photos. But got super close to him. That antelope did not care about anything.
No, he did. You could I think I could have knifed him.
Yeah.
Like I told you at one point, like I should have just knifed him and then claimed self-defense because nobody would have believed that story anyways. So
no. So then you know, then I came back and we did some chatting and. So I wanted to go back to the BLM land from the day before that was the other sliver. And so Tom and Zoe were going to go with me, and Eric was going to stay there and at this spot and hang out. And I'll let you tell the story because we start walking back.
Yeah, we start walking back, and we're just taking our time. But, I mean, just another thing, we decided the night before that we were going to try and shoot some rabbits if we could because we all had our small game tags. So we're walking back and we were we're about 50 yards away from where Eric was.
More or less.
And not even 10 feet from me, I look up from the ground and I see a rabbit.
A gigantic fluffy rabbit.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
And so I told you and Zoe, I was like, stop. And she was just sitting there blending in with the brush. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Justin, I think I see a rabbit.
Yeah, and I was like, holy smokes. Yeah, there's a giant jackrabbit there, like the size of a house cat.
And so you walk up, and we're sitting there pondering how we should take this.
Yep.
So I was like, we're sitting there looking at each other. I was like, here's my knife.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't feel comfortable, nor did I know the legality of knifing a rabbit. So then I was like, then the rabbit gets up and like freezes again in like this weird pose of like you can't see me but you can't see me, and then it like does the normal rabbit thing where it runs like a big circle and comes back around within like 20 yards of you. So like I marked the spot on my Onyx and I was like, all right, we're gonna go down to the truck. I'm gonna get my 22 and I'm gonna come back up here. And I was like, wait, I was like, Tom, Zoe, you guys just stay here. The rabbit's like right there. If the rabbit moves, just follow the rabbit. So they stay there and I walk down. It takes me about 15 minutes to walk down and back because we were probably like a quarter mile or half mile away from the truck. So I walk back, swap out, grab the 22, come back up, take care of business with the rabbit. And, this rabbit's huge. Like if you go on our social media, I just posted a reel today. It's a great reel. Actually, it's about advertising. So if you're an advertising partner, we just started our advertising program up for podcast, for magazine, and for website. But look at the reel. The opening picture for the reel is me skinning this jackrabbit. And I would say, like, it was probably the size of my upper torso, like, lengthwise once you had it stretched out. I've got all the meat in the fridge upstairs. I did a little dry age on it. So it's a jackrabbit, so they're big rabbits. Yeah, that's it right there. Yeah, it's a large rabbit.
That is. Large rabbit.
Yeah. I would think we got a good amount of meat up there that I'm going to play around with. But I also really like jackrabbit. I've got some good recipes, some older recipes up on the website from some times where I shot some when I was living in California. But still pretty tasty. They're dark meat instead of a light meat. But yeah, got that all skinned out, ready to go. And then we decided we're all now collectively going to go back to the BLM land, which we get back there. And then as we get back there, part of it is on this ridge overlooking the wet mountains again. And this time the wet mountains are truly wet and there's like a big storm rolling in. So we essentially turned right around and like moved quickly as we could back towards the vehicles, which were at that point about 2 miles away. And got there before it started really coming down. Then it started coming down and we tried to go to a couple other spots, but just like the rain, the viz, the access, these roads were not great. I don't know though. I think all in all, for my first time, not my first time Colorado antelope hunting, but my first time getting very near to Colorado antelope, I think we all agree that this zone was not our first, this unit was not our first choice.
It was literally my eighth.
Eighth choice. I don't even think, I didn't even put in for the antelope draw, the primary, because I wasn't planning on it, because I had all my eggs in the basket for Wyoming, which I ended up drawing 2 antelope tags and a mule deer tag for, which some people were probably upset about because they drew none, but I don't know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we like antelope here, but yeah, I don't know. We'll close out quickly here as we're getting near time. But thoughts on kind of like the hunt as a whole, or like last thoughts or takeaways. We'll just go kind of around the room.
Sure. First thing, you had mentioned something. We were, for lack of a better term, trying to get away from that storm.
Yeah.
On the last day, you mentioned something on the walk back that I want to give credit where credit is due, which is the three of us are all tall, big men.
Yeah.
And Zoe kept up with all of us on that.
Oh, yeah.
At that grueling pace out. And you had made a comment about how good of a hunter she already is.
Oh, yeah.
And man, it was impressive. I was legit impressed, Zoe. So good job on that.
I'm pretty stoked. I mean, you're 10 years old. And at this point, this is like the second major like trip you've taken with me for like a couple days. I think.
Yes,
I think
the first one was in Florida.
No, well, all right, so maybe the third. So the one last year when Colin was mule deer hunting here, and we did 10 miles that day because I calculated it all up. And that one ended with Zoe being like, do we really have to go over there? Like, I'm very tired. Can we drive to it or, like, go home? And so I called it, which I think is – I'll give this. This is a hot tip for parents out there. As you introduce your kid to the – outdoors, like, recognize that moment to stop, because if you push them past that moment, that it's going to take the enjoyment factor out, and that's not what you want them to remember.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I mean, she's my daughter's age.
Yeah,
so that's why it triggered to me.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's why it rains heavy. But if you come on a hunt with me again, or if I go on a hunt with you, I would be more than happy to have Zoe come along as a hunting partner again.
Zoe, do you have any thoughts before you go? Because you got to go to bed.
Not that much. I want to go again.
You want to go again?
Yes.
Okay.
Awesome.
Well, that's good. That's mission accomplished. All right. Zoe is going to sign off. All right. Please keep going.
Yeah. But no, as far as my experience, ultimately, I don't want to hunt that unit again, but if given the the option of you don't get to hunt antelope or you have to hunt this unit, which has pretty much been my option for the past 2 years,
yeah,
I'll go back down there again.
Yeah, I think so.
I was telling your wife when I came in about how I had a great weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a very successful hunt to me. Whether that's how I don't define success by if I fill a tag or not. I define it by building friendships and having a good time. And that's what this weekend was for me. So I appreciate you two coming down there with me.
Yeah, absolutely. Tommy, you got some last thoughts?
So it was my first time ever at antelope hunting. First of all, I just want to thank you and Eric for teaching me and mentoring me about hunting antelope and really give me a good experience out there. I mean, we didn't kill anything, but like Eric said, it's all about the experience, friendships, and learning, and like getting that knowledge so I can hopefully pass it down one day to my kids. Overall, I think it was very successful. Was I worn out? You dang straight I was. But I wouldn't have quit. I mean, we were all worn out, but we kept on going to hopefully get us something, but ultimately good experience, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I had a great weekend. I do think, yeah, it's a two-part success piece in my mind. Like, one, getting Zoe out to hunt and experience big game. Like, that's one of the reasons I wanted to move out to Colorado, is to make it more accessible, you know, for her to come along. And, like, the plan is, like, she's wait-listed right now for Hunter's Ed, and hopefully we'll get her out, get through that class and out for some late-season hunts and small game and stuff like that. So that definitely keeping cultivating that interest for me is there. And then getting Tom involved in sort of like his first Western style hunt of like, hey, it's time to go out and we're gonna hike and we're gonna glass and we're gonna spot and we're gonna stalk and we're gonna glass and we're gonna eat freeze dried meals and we're gonna worry about drinking all of our water or eating all of our snacks, like, you know, those things. So I say thanks to you guys for putting up with me, because like I'm it's hard for me to sit in one spot for very long. I get very fidgety.
Yeah,
we yeah. noticed.
Yep. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I think in a different unit, I think it becomes hard to. I want to move when there's nowhere to move to.
I do too, but no, I'm of the same mind of you, is that if given the opportunity to hunt this spot again, if there was no other option, like I would go down, but I feel like I'm a little more comfortable now to know like, oh, I'm not going to go over to that piece of land. I'm not going to go waste my time there. I'm not going to do this. Like I'm going to get there early. I'm going to go here. I'm going to do this. I'm going to like kind of rotate around and stake, you know, quote unquote, stake my claim to certain pieces. So, yeah. But I mean, also dude, there's a ton of pressure in that spot, but that's one reason why I really love antelope, is because it's not like deer, it's not like elk, it's not like some things where, you know, there's like a morning hunt and an afternoon hunt. Like, you're generally engaged in the hunt all day, because like for the most part, if the weather's right and everything lines up, like the antelope are moving continuously, which gives you the opportunity on, you know, a 400 by 1 mile piece of land, or a, you know, a 200 by 200 mile piece of land. Like if the antelope are there and they're moving around, it just takes them being in the spot that you need them to be in, which happens. No, all around successful hunt. I am excited though to go to move forward into the next and hopefully connect with some other antelope and, you know, up in Wyoming. But no, excited we did it. And I think too, like, one of the major takeaways for me is like starting to sort of stretch my wings more and more here in Colorado, because I do like hunting the plains. I like hunting the eastern plains, like we did with antelope and mule deer last year with Colin, and sort of my plan was to get back out to some of those same spots, but like Eric mentioned, like it just didn't line up. And then instead of doing antelope archery, I did some antelope or some elk archery instead, so I kind of like changed up my priority. But really, really good weekend. Ready to move to the next. But I do want to say thanks, everybody, for listening. I know this is a little deviation of our normal one, but I like to keep you guys on your toes to hear some good deep dive stories. Hopefully you took some great lessons from it. Hopefully you think about hunting in Colorado. It's a great place to do it. I mean, sorry, it's a terrible place to hunt. Nobody should come here. No, that's never going to be my mindset. Like, it's a great place to come. Like, come out, hunt with us, shoot me a message. Let's hunt antelope together, whatever you want to do. But as always, our show notes will be online. So all the links to things that we mentioned that are linkable will be available there, and you can click and read and do whatever. Also, to head over to social media, make sure you're following us, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the
I put those pictures up on my Instacart.
So. Your Instacart.
Yeah.
Nice. In the snap face.
Snap face.
Perfect. So yeah. The weekend. Just so they're all there. Don't forget to hit checkout on the. Make sure you're subscribed to that so you can see what all we're doing there. And then whatever podcast platform you're listening to, punch that 5-star button. Leave us a review. Tell us we're doing wrong or, you know, tell us we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
One of the most legendary shows in the outdoors is on Waypoint TV. Don't miss Primo's Truth About Hunting, Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.